Apparently, there is a child welfare reform bill now in the hands of our state Senate. House Bill 5004 passed the House with bipartisan support, and this legislation aims to increase oversight and accountability within DCF. The latest incident that occurred under DCF's watch is pretty profound, and it's pretty horrible, to be honest. According to the Office of the Child Advocate, a child died by suicide last month within an hour of a DCF visit. The child reportedly asked to be placed in foster care, but DCF decided to keep the child with their family. So I wanted to have back on the show Acting Child Advocate Christina Guillo to talk more about this case, certainly, but also help us to understand this potential reform bill if it passes the Senate as well. Christina, welcome back to the show, and I really appreciate having you here. Let's first talk about this horrific case, because obviously your office is very involved with understanding the details of it and looking for answers.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. Yes, we are looking at that case, and we published some information on that case, obviously a very limited amount of information, but we did that because we were alarmed with what we saw in that case, and because we have become increasingly alarmed at what we're seeing with regard to case practice. And we think it's really important that the state ensure first that caseworkers at DCF have the resources they need to do the work, and also that that we have systems for accountability to making sure that work gets done.
So you sent a letter to the commissioner. Have you heard back from Commissioner Hamilton?
Not in any formal way. I mean, our letter asked them to provide us with a response within 90 days, which is what our statute requires when we issue a report. So we have asked for a written response, and we expect that we will receive one.
I don't want to talk out of turn because I don't know the situation here. But in regards to this child, in this case where DCF is directly involved, do you believe at this point, knowing what you know, is this a systematic issue? Because, of course, immediately people are going to say, well, that was negligence. But that's not necessarily true. And the only reason I say that is because I know people who are DCF workers. And time and time again, when I've talked to my friends or people that I know that work for DCF, that is like the number one thing they are told to do is to figure out how do you keep kids with their families. In sometimes, when they've told me cases without like names or anything like that, I think to myself, really? The goal is to keep these kids with the families, even though X, Y, and Z is present. And it seems like workers are told that it doesn't really matter which way you got to get to the top of the mountain. The top of the mountain is the kids stay with their families. And I think to myself, really, that's the goal here. That seems so broken to me, that concept.
Yeah, I mean, yes, children should be with their families whenever it is possible, when it is safe to do so. And so I think sort of having a goal that's based on keeping kids in home isn't quite right? The goal should be that we are providing solid assessments of safety based on the needs of the child and family, right? And so when we look at cases and we look at their data, what we're concerned about is, I think our biggest concern is when we look at that data, the quality of supervision ratings, meaning are the social workers getting the guidance they need in supervision? That's rated as a strength less than 20% of the time in those in-home cases, right? That's a real issue.
That's and bad. So that's really bad.
Right? That's a real issue. And so DCF has good policies in place for assessing safety, for making sure that workers go out to the homes, that they meet with the children. There's very specific criteria around those visits. But what we're finding through their data is that those policies are not consistently adhered to. And again, that's not sort of not blaming the caseworkers, right? Because we really need to look at the why, right? Why aren't those being followed? And is that right? And so we talked in our report about support for caseworkers.
Well, I was going to say, if you because I'm cutting you off, honestly. I'm thinking off of that. You know, what would be a reason? Like, what would be a why from your understanding?
Well, I mean, what we hear anecdotally is that workers are feeling very overwhelmed, that they don't feel like they have the ability to meet all of the criteria that are expected of them. And we think there are a few drivers for that. And I'll say the data that we were looking at is from most recently is October 25, right? So, some of this data is before we made some changes to caseloads and CT kind, but, the workers are saying that they're very overwhelmed, and we need to hear that and address the services that are available for families, right? That's part of why workers feel overwhelmed. And also what kinds of supports do they have to do the work, right? There's not a lot of administrative support or case aides who can run out, right? When you take a baby into care, for example, right, they might need formula and diapers and somebody's got to run to the store and get that stuff, right? That can be done by case aides. It doesn't have to be done by social workers. And so, we think it's really important to build in adequate support so that they can really focus on the social work and the assessments of safety and the needs of the families.
And I mean, again, in this situation, we've got the acting child advocate here, Christina Gio. This situation with a child who died by suicide, I mean, is just devastating. But do you think this was somebody following the protocol? I mean, that's, I think, my biggest question is, because I think that's where I worry about, yes, obviously caseload totally matters and being totally overwhelmed by what you have to do. And I know we have a shortage of DCF workers. That absolutely is a fact. We need to focus on it. I think we've talked about that before. But is this a matter of negligence or is this a matter of I followed the protocols, I did what I was supposed to do, and the results were not obviously what we intended?
Right. So we don't have answers to those questions yet, but those are the questions, right? That's the most important question for us to look at, is whether or not the policies were followed. If they were followed and we came to a decision that is wrong, then we need to be looking at those policies again. If they weren't followed, then we need to understand the why, right? Is this just a worker who did not follow protocol, or are there other reasons for that? And that's all part of what we'll be investigating as we look further into that case.
We have the acting child advocate for our Office of Child Advocate here, Christina Gio, and we so appreciate you, Christina, always making the time for WICC. I had one more quick question before we move on to the child welfare reform bill, which is fascinating to me. In your report, at least from your office, when it talks about this child who died by suicide within an hour of a DCF visit, it says the child had asked to be placed in foster care. What is the age, or how does that work, where if you have a kid who is advocating that they don't want to go back to their family or they don't feel safe? So, like, I guess my question is, at what age is the weight of the words coming from the kid enough for the state to say, okay, we're going to put them in foster care, or okay, we're going to leave them with their foster parents, or okay, they're going to stay with grandma and grandpa because they can't be with mom and dad? Like, what age does that matter?
Yeah, I mean, it should matter at every age. And I, the policy does, there's no sort of policy that has a specific age where if the child indicates that they want to enter foster care, you do it or you don't do it, right? There's no sort of black and white rule like that. But it's absolutely something that we should be listening to, right? If children are telling you that they do not feel safe, that should carry a lot of weight.
Like, that should be the gold rule.
And it should lead
to
a lot more questions as well, right? And so that's one of the things that is so concerning to us with regard to this particular case.
That's what would concern me, too, because I think about, even in a school, right? If you have a kid who, you know, has an accusation against a teacher, for example, they go to the principal, they tell you, they do a formal report, that teacher's put on leave. Like, no questions asked. Mm-hmm. You're going to see if what that student said is true or not, and then the consequences will follow if it was real or it wasn't. But I find that fascinating. Like, if you have a kid, and the only reason I know sort of how rare it would be for somebody to ask for mm-hmm. foster care is because my husband was adopted. And when I say to him, you know, like, is that something that a kid would, you know, demand? Like, hey, put me in foster care rather than stay with my family. And he's like, it's got to be pretty bad, I would think. Now, again, he's from a different state. But I mean, I'm thinking to myself, how did that not bear enough weight for DCF to at least be like, we need to evaluate this a little bit more? I mean, if you've got a kid begging to go to foster care, to me, that screams that something is very, very wrong in that house.
It's a red flag. Absolutely. And I think that's again, right, we're at the beginning of our investigation, but that's part of what we want to try to understand as we look at that case is how did the department get to that decision given those facts?
Yeah, great question. Yeah. So yeah. I want to know about this welfare reform bill, because I did not even know there was a DCF reform bill being discussed, let alone, like, if you type in House Bill 5004 into ChatGPT, because I got to, you know, I'm a one-man band, I got to make things happen quickly. It's still referring back to last session, which was an environmental bill or something. And I didn't even realize this bill existed. I know it's already passed through pretty quickly. It passed through the Committee on Children, got approval from the House. It now is with the Senate. I mean, tell us about this, because I didn't even know there was a reform bill.
There is, and there's a lot in, you know, included in that bill. I think some of the most important pieces from our perspective are there's a requirement for a working group to help with creating a data dashboard for DCF, which would enable folks to get some real-time quantitative data, right? How many children are in care, how many children are in in-home care, things of that nature. It also, I think, most importantly, creates an oversight committee, so a legislative oversight committee to really dig into what is happening with regard to the quality of work at DCF and to make recommendations, both with regard to policy change, but also for resources. And we think that's incredibly important in terms of system change, right? We need to be able to have some really honest and open conversations about what the challenges are that the department's facing and what do they need? What do caseworkers need to be able to do this work and not feel overwhelmed every day, right? So we're hoping that the Oversight Committee will work on those issues. There are a couple other things that the bill does. It includes a provision that if there are more than three reports within a 12-month period, that an investigation will be conducted by a new investigator. So really a way to ensure that there's sort of a fresh set of eyes if there are multiple reports within a short period of time. And there are some other things the bill does, tries to address a little bit of workforce development and also some support for relative and fictive kin caregivers.
This working group that would be kind of working on the systems, I mean, how long are we giving them to basically give us results?
So the Oversight Committee has to provide a report, I believe, by January 1, 2028. But it's an ongoing group. And so, you know, we have other similar types of oversight committees, like the Juvenile Justice Policy and Oversight Committee, that's been in existence for 10 years now. And every year it makes recommendations for improvements in the system. And so this oversight committee, like I said, it has a report that is due. I believe that date is January 1, 2028. It's their first report that's due. And then, we would expect to see that as an ongoing effort.
So this is so not directed at you, Christina Guillo, I hope you know. That's crazy, though. So we're going to wait for a first report till January of 2028. Like, that's wild. I wish DCF would just share what is going on. Like, it drives me insane to me that they can't just say, hey, these systems don't work, or we don't have... I don't know why we need a working group to be like, hey, DCF is severely understaffed. Our system are archaic. We don't have good leadership. Like, any of those things. I don't know. I'm talking out of turn. But this is crazy. So we're going to wait for a working group to give us a report in a year and a half, and then we'll maybe act on that. And again, that's not towards you. I just think that's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah, I hear you. I think, look, there's another legislative session that starts in January. That's a long session. Our report includes a number of recommendations. My hope is that that committee will start meeting very quickly, and that they will take up some recommendations, right? The statute requires a report by a certain date. That doesn't mean they can't do any work before then, right? And so we certainly hope that there will be recommendations that can be brought forth by next session. And to your point in terms of, you know, why isn't this information out there? That's part of why we wrote this letter, right? We've recommended in several reports that DCF make their quality assurance information publicly available and bring it to legislators, in large part because we believe there does need to be that kind of transparency, in part for accountability, but also in part so that legislators can and policymakers can decide what the agency needs, right? And so that wasn't happening. There is a state advisory council, which is actually meeting this morning. They might be meeting right now, that meets regularly to review DCF's work. But the agency hasn't made this data, that the data that we put into our letter of findings, they haven't made that publicly available. And we think that's necessary.
Yes. It also is so suspect that for so long we just don't require that. I mean, we're talking about one of the two most vulnerable populations in Connecticut, which are children. And I just think that is bizarre that we kind of just let this agency float and do what they need to do. And it requires, you know, a reform bill or an investigation and to have your questions answered after a kid takes their life in DCF custody. I mean, it to me is so wild. So I would not be surprised if this reform bill gets bipartisan support in the Senate. It's a no-brainer, right? At least it's a step in the right direction. But certainly the story is not over. And Christina Guillo, I cannot thank you enough for always making the time to come on the show, acting child advocate for Connecticut's Office of the Child Advocate. I'm sure we will talk again soon, but thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.